Yes. It's foggy. It's foggy. Little weather report.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I'm thinking of, we just got some recent notes from some listeners, thinking of our friends in Australia who are listening, starting up their school year, right? They're coming out of their summer into the new school year. Warm greetings to you all. It ain't Toronto down there. Yeah, and a friend from Texas. A friend from Texas is on my mind. Yeah. Welcome to the light in everything.
And we begin, as we always do, with the Gospel of John in chapter 8. Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.
Yeah, more and more. I know it's true for us that we just basically live because of that light. Feel how it gives us life. And I can't wait to get into another conversation seeking that light together around this letter to the Ephesians, which has been our focus now for some time. And we're in this last chapter, chapter 6, focusing in on the well-known portion of this letter, the armor of God, this call by Paul to his community, the community of Christians, to become aware that they are in the midst of a cosmic war, of which there are many players, very high rank and power, powers and principalities, spiritual forces of darkness in the heavenly realms, heavenly places, affecting humans, direct, see through the human beings around you. Don't think of them as the ones who are your direct enemy, but through them to the enemies of humanity. You are all brothers and sisters. At our roots and towards the fruit and our goal. Mm-hmm. And we have worked through some portions of that armor, putting it on. He says, put on this armor of God in order to stand within this battle securely, protected, ready. And we have moved through portions of it. Gird yourself around the waist with a belt of truth. Put on the breastplate of righteousness. And shoe your feet with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. And last week we lifted up in all things the shield of faith, the shield of trust. We emphasize the translation of that same word, not as belief in something abstract, but trust in a being we know. And we did some beautiful work looking how faith and trust grows through knowing. And then started to explore how is it a shield? How is the activity of trust something that protects me, blocks the effect of, extinguishes in this case, the flaming arrows of the evil one? So this image of the human under attack from directly aimed shots fired, flaming arrows to be pierced and burned, and that there is something we can lift up to block it this surprising thing when we talked about, again, how our natural tendency would be like, we need an ironclad, hard, cold shell, a tank, something really, you know, shield means block it all. And so you get hard. Like the one who's truly protected is a hard heart. And how this quality of trust seems to be exactly the opposite. Like this naive, trusting soul, you're going to get killed out there.
Good point.
So he really tried to work through some of those a little bit and with the questions you asked me. And I know, Jonah, that you have also lived and wrestled with the fallen way, the way in which the idea of faith has fallen and the true meaning of it. And yeah, we also, I feel like it's really important. We also looked at the different places Paul uses faith in the letter and started with this first place that it seems to be this power whereby Christ can enter our heart.
Right.
That rather than this shield protecting from arrows at the end, first it was this power that allows an indwelling of the being of love itself into the chalice of our heart. Like that's just the first picture.
Right.
Which is so powerful.
It's also not a shield.
Right. not in the way we think of like the Roman shields of his time.
Right. It's just in this particular image of these flaming arrows coming at us from the evil one, faith can be a shield.
Yeah.
But faith is also in this, the great law of attraction, so to speak.
Oh, nice. I was going to bring in the law of attraction. Nice.
Of Christ entering our hearts, attracting his being to enter our very holy of holies. Yeah, so faith is a power and a substance and a life that is much more nuanced than just a shield. But the shield is also a very important image that shows us what it can do.
Hugely. Hugely. And so I want to keep building that and bring a question to you, because I know you live in these things deeply. The very first time it comes up in the letter is this address to the Ephesians. This is verse 15, chapter 1. For this reason, because I have heard of your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love toward all the saints, the people of the community. So I've heard of a trust you have, O community, in him. I want to write you. So there's like rumor out. They trust in him. And then in chapter 2, verse 8, it says something that is like a byline in the evangelical world of Christianity, like a real foundational column of what their trust is built on and the vision that they have of our relationship with this being. This is this line: for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God. You've shared with our listeners before. I've reviewed it. We've come back to it again and again. How your own spiritual journey didn't want anything to do with the whole Christian thing and had a lot of emphasis on mastery and what, you know, the capacity and power of the committed spiritual master. as a kind of vision. Like, I want to be an inner Lord of myself, need nothing, no one, and took up things like Zen,
yeah,
which is very challenging meditative practice. Mm-hmm. And this inner kind of spiritual warrior picture, monk warrior.
Yeah, totally.
Image. And how you've just gone through this unbelievable shifting in your life where you have like, I feel like you have like a radar. And it's like, you know, NORAD. Do you know what NORAD is?
I've heard of it, but remind
North American Air Defense.
Right, right. It is like this radar for
there's like any all missiles around the whole of North America, Canada, and the U.S. You right. know, they're like constantly on the lookout for unidentified, unwelcomed, unplanned ships or planes, so they can scramble their jets and defend. I feel like you've got this like radar system now.
Totally.
For a spirituality that says like, I've got this and I don't need, and I don't need to receive anything. It's all through me. It's all through my eye. I can do it. And I am in need of nothing. A kind of all in overemphasis of the independence and self-reliance. You've become a lover and guardian of grace. Is that fair?
That's very fair. Okay. I love it.
Nice. So one of the reasons I feel like this sentence connects with the shield is this phrase, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God. Not a result of works, so that no one may boast. What's at stake? What is the protection actually? The shield activity here, the saving activity. Why does this faith grace process, what does that have to do with the saving of me, the protection? I'm so interested to hear.
Yeah. Thoughts. Well, I mean, that's, yeah, wonderful setup and kind of, it is indeed such a strong, especially in the evangelical kind of more Protestant Bible-based movements. This mystery of we're saved by grace is, you hear it all the time, right? And it's almost, in a way, it's almost an overemphasis on the other side. And perhaps if I was if I was an evangelical minister or pastor, I would be a warrior for the activity, the dignified I activity that needs to be added to grace.
So I see you find yourself in a community of Christians that may be leading the other way, and you have to help.
Right. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting thing because I have some family members that are more on the emphasis of it's only God that's active. It's only grace. And I found myself in conversation with them really trying to show what the participatory quality of the human eye is with grace. So it's always fundamentally, a participation of grace and works, of effort and gift. But in this sense, I mean, in the sense that you're asking, in terms of also my story, if I look at the danger of perhaps a flaming arrow being something like my own pride, that I can do all things on my own, that I suffer from, and many human souls suffer from, and they don't even know it necessarily, that that I've got to do, if it's going to be done well and right, and if anything's going to happen, I've got to do it.
It's me. Yeah.
It's me. All the way up to the more nuanced and subtle but powerful imagination of the spiritual master, the spiritual warrior who's got all these capacities and doesn't need anything from anyone. Like the Taoist monk used to be my image, right? Kind of like Yoda in Dagobah, who's right. just in the little...
alone on some swamp.
You know, just... But he's got... He just... Because he's got all the force and he can just, you know, do everything on his own. Needs nothing. And what I found in my journey, as I was kind of working with those pictures and images and practices, is that I became unloving more and more. I had a subtle kind of pride that wasn't so subtle.
Felt maybe more subtle to you than
wasn't so subtle to others. Certainly not to God. And upon this fundamental experience, where at communion I received myself from Christ, from his being, that it was bestowed upon me.
That what is your own was in him.
Was in him.
Came as a gift.
And it wasn't like
that's he... Like a, that's such a... I mean, talk about Zen paradoxes. Like that right? is an extraordinary one.
Yourself is not in you. It's given to you, and then you become more yourself. And it wasn't like given, like, here's a gift, and then...
And now it's
done. Mm. It's more in Christ Jesus's presence, it's being gifted. So there's a kind of divine higher interdependence that's needed to be in communion with him, to be married with him, is myself.
Be in communion with him is myself. To be united and joined and in the marrying of my of me with him. That whole, it's a relationship that's an I.
Right. Therefore, gradually, as that grows and I start to know Christ in others, then the I becomes a community. Literally.
Yeah. That one does take a lot of time to land, I know.
It's a
truly high spiritual thought, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, I would say, and I don't mean that in any kind of boasting arrogance at all. Actually, I just mean it factually that, and one can be patient with this. This is a fundamental experience, first and foremost. Yeah. It's not something that I would say can be just found through reasoning or study.
Right. This isn't a doctrine.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe where it's an experience that we're trying to find words for.
Yeah.
That becomes the truth of existence for us.
Right, and it's not just a personal experience because it's reflected in the gospel so much. It's not just a personal experience because it's reflected in the Holy Liturgy. It's not just a personal experience because it's reflected in the saints. So that's also important.
So good. So well said, yeah.
Right? But the experience also is in... as that begins to occur, where I feel myself is actually a gift that's bestowed into my heart through a living relationship, I actually can't feel pride in that way. Pride, the sense of I've accomplished something and it's because of my superior capacities that I am that. Like if I win a video game or if I work really hard at my job and I get a bunch of money, those are accomplishments that I can feel where it could give me a sense of pride and puff me up. But to have an experience in this way that myself is actually a gift and can only come through the power of another. Pride, if I'm in that place, pride has no place. It falls away. It burns up. So in that sense, then, this kind of faith experience that I can start to trust that myself is from another, from the light of the world, in the light of the world, in relationship with him, then that's a shield to the flaming arrow of pride. It's actually the only shield I would submit.
It's so well said, so exact, beautiful. And I think maybe there's, you know, that we have that phrase, it pricked my pride.
That's good, yeah.
It just feels like that we know, I think we're very familiar with that experience of, if someone disrespects me, my pride, it's like says a word that like doubts me or disrespects me or undermines my sense of self. They're shooting arrows. An arrow is shot that can hit that which is pride.
Right? So let's just take that for example. So like, you know, these arrows come all the time in my experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, gosh, someone could say, oh, Jonah, you're so impatient. Or Jonah, you're so, you know, sometimes my kid, daddy, don't be so grumpy. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know what. There's all kinds of things that could pierce me in such a way that it hurts my pride because I want to have a certain image in the world and in my family.
You want your name to be great.
Yeah. I want to have a certain identity. Yeah. That is upheld as honorable.
Yes.
And if anything comes in it and attacks that, then it's a problem. But it's not a problem, or at least it's blocked from being a problem. It's shielded. If again and again I turn my trust to an identity that's not about being a perfect guy or a super awesome whatever or a warrior that's always right. But if my identity and my trust is in myself is something that is also broken, but in relationship to the gift of my being from him. Mm. Mm. Then the comment of a weakness, if it's true or not, isn't going to pierce the core of my being. Mm. Mm. If I trust in that experience. Now, I'm not always experiencing this communion with Christ.
Right.
But I...
Or parts of you are... Right? Like maybe you're...
I'm asleep to it sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm awake to it again and again, but I'm also asleep to it. But I trust in what I have seen and what I have known. Mm-hmm. So that's another part of faith, that it attracts something to me. It knows something in the moment, but it also trusts what it has seen and known. Mm. And that's what I find is also part of this shield.
Amazing.
Is to remember my truest self.
Yeah. There's an interesting part of that when it says also raise up the shield of faith. It also doesn't say there raise up the shield of faith in Jesus. And you and I have found ourselves recently as we've been led to trying to equip our students who are becoming candidates for ordination who are about to go out and build community. We have our ecclesia class or the class of congregational building. And we have found ourselves again and again and again from so many different angles talking about how to always and in different ways work to build up trust.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how you see also just this, because as a pastor and public person, someone whose work is dependent on people's trusting in you.
True.
And then you go ahead and do a bonehead thing, or you break trust somewhere, or you say something that was wrong, or you push too hard with your will on something where you sin, where you hurt someone, or and where you undermine the trust that is in them towards you. And therefore also your pride is pricked because now they're looking at you. Oh, you're less than I thought you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see something there also of the shield of faith at work in the relationship processes there? I'm curious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important that trust and faith, if it's true and real, always, whether or not I'm directing it to or not, always it's finds its way back to God. If it's real trust. So it may be unconscious that I'm actually turning my gaze, but if it's real trust, it always connects to the forces of God. And that has to do with the picture and insight that we have that this armor is not just righteousness in general, trust in general, peace in general. It's coming from Jesus Christ's righteousness, trust, peace that he has in God, that he has in the Father. Yeah. So I think that's really key, that it's like love. If I'm really loving, there's lawfulnesses to love. Mm. Even if I'm not a professing Christian, I can still love in a way that is of Christ.
Because it's a power and he is that power.
Exactly. I can still, if I'm Malala, I can still sacrificially give myself, offer myself for the education, higher education of women. In the face of death with the Taliban shooting me. And that sacrificial love, even though, she's Muslim and she's not a confessing Christian and isn't consciously saying this is from Christ, it still is. Yeah. It's that fundamental sacrificial love of God. But I forgot the other part of the question.
Well, that, because in some ways, right, well, the shield of faith. So I could have this picture that I've got my faith in God and I'm going to lift it up and I'm going to use it like hard armor.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. Because of the example about what if I mess up and that
my... You're just in your relationships in the community.
Got it, right. No, this is very important because... Again, this faith and the protection is not against being seen in an unfavorable way. The protection is not against being wounded. The protection is not against suffering.
What's left?
Right. What's left, right?
Be protected from. This is so good.
Exactly. Because so what I've experienced in congregational life is that if I defend my honor, if I think my shield is to defend, no, you're wrong, I'm right. That actually erodes the faith that is living in the hearts even more of the congregation. But what I've discovered again and again is that if I allow that to pierce me and allow the pain to be there, the wound to be there, yes, I erred. Yes, I was impatient. Yes, I was angry in that moment. And I pray now that God help me to surrender, let go of my impatience, bring me his peace. If I redeem that, so to speak, with the faith in God.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what do you mean by that?
Meaning, I allow the wound to be what it is and the weakness to be what it is, but it breaks me open to reach to God. Mm-hmm. That I'm trusting in God to help me with that weakness. It's kind of a reverse. It's not blocking anything. That faith is asking God to help me with that weakness. Then that vulnerable life with God protects me, strangely, from the potential burning of the arrow that would come into my heart if I defended my honor. Yeah, I'm not sure if our,
because this is all so inverted again and
it's
again,
inverse. Right?
The work of the kingdom of God is so inverted from what things look like in this world. What is real protection?
Right. It's a good question because it highlights there's a false protection and there's a true protection.
So what I heard, and I want to check, is so the you're pricked or you're pierced or you're hurt or somebody doubts you or somebody disrespects you or maybe you've actually done something wrong, but you don't want it to be true and you're trying to come up with reasons to, you know, explain why you did what you did and defend your position or say, you know, you're in this kind of battle with the persons in your world there. And rather than trusting in your own ability to defend and protect yourself, you turn with those things towards the one you think is wiser, greater, more loving, truer than you. The divine reality, which you've come to know is where you're better, best, self is even dwelling.
That's right.
And so you go vulnerably, meaning very truthfully, saying what you, I don't know what I'm struggling with, maybe even complaint, whatever, wherever you are with who you are to that being. And by coming into relation to that being, you experience in that utter vulnerability something of the feeling I'm now truly protected.
Yeah.
I've been utterly vulnerable with in the divine presence. And now when I go back into the situation, I'm feeling truly protected.
Exactly. I mean, it's because if I'm overly attached to my image that person is carrying of me, I also have to let go of that. It's kind of like Christ, again, who goes through processes where he's saying certain things and doing certain things where people say, I'm out. Are you going to leave me too? He says after, he says, I'm the bread of life. Yeah. So it's not that Christ is losing his temper or all these things, but there's a similar dynamic where people, his faith in God doesn't necessarily guarantee people are going to like him. So part of that protection process is letting go of protecting my self-image or what people think about me. And at the same time, allowing the pain of the weakness being true, perhaps, and asking God to help me in that. And what I'm doing there is I'm also then demonstrating how to be in right relationship with God.
Well, the demonstration part is interesting, right? Because at first I'm in the picture you've painted, I'm imagining you alone with God in that process. But then at some point, this practice is coming out and becoming a social. Maybe we need a story. Maybe a good example.
Yeah.
I just had it happen.
Oh, good. I was just thinking.
It was awful. Okay. And you know, you're not going to be shocked by this. This is just one of the weaknesses I continue to be asked to bear that I can't shed. I would love to shed it. I have prayed about it so much. Like, because I care about people and because I care about my self-image, it's painful.
Yeah.
It's a double pain. My pride pain, and I don't want to hurt people. I love people. Yeah. I don't need that in your life. You don't need my weaknesses hurting you. So for a long time, I've been looking forward to having a lunch or a tea time with one of the people in the community.
Yeah.
Someone immediately, as soon as I came here to the congregation, we had an immediate connection. It was warm. And we had a shared interest in music. I was going to meet with them. And we even interacted. I put it in my schedule. I have all these techniques so I can remember this appointment. He's smiling. He knows what's coming. She even got confused as to which day it was on. Wrote me an email. I said, no, it's on Friday. Like, I had it there. And then I finish my class on Friday at 11:30 with the students. I come out and they're sitting in the waiting room is the treasurer of the seminary. I'm like, what? Oh, shoot. I've got this other meeting with him. So now I'm already in like altered state because I should be knowing that he's going to be there because I also made this appointment with him.
Double booked. Yeah.
I'm thinking it's a short one, but at this point, there's no, and I have a meeting with the treasurer. It's interesting. We're in the midst of it. I can't wait to get home, but I've never even thought of the meeting that I was supposed to have at lunch. I don't think if it's Saturday either. Like, no thought. This person has called my phone. My phone doesn't recognize it, but I don't even see that a person has called. It doesn't happen until Sunday, and I'm helping to pass out the communion of God.
Oh,
and yeah. I come to this person and it's just like, you have sinned against this human. You left them hanging. You didn't commune. You did not show up.
Yeah.
You said you would be there and you didn't show up. Mm. Oh, just the disrespect. I was just like, and I'm going through my mind immediately. The defensive tactics are in. They're like, okay, so what's the reason? How do I explain it? Well, first of all, I'm just in utter disbelief.
Yeah.
How could this have happened? Why, Lord, did this happen? I had every good intention. I tried all the tricks I had and I failed. And I'm like going through the circuit. Can I find some excuse? So this is the first thing. I'm trying to protect my image to not have to own my sin. So I'm starting with the belt of truth.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm like, strapping it on.
That's good. They're all connected.
They're all connected. I'm like, I don't want this to be true. I don't want this to be true. And I'm like, and I'm going through my mind. And it's like, there's a lot of evidence here. It's true, Patrick. It's true. I'm like starting to unite myself with the truth of it.
Right.
that's already a process of like letting it in, letting myself be pierced by this fact of my sin. Ugh, okay. I can admit it to myself. Now I'm already in my mind, maybe I could go home earlier. I don't have to see her afterwards. I don't have to go and stand in my shame. In part because I've always treasured the appreciation in her eyes. And I don't want to see coming back to me in her eyes, why did you hurt me?
Yeah.
Why did you fail me?
Disappointment, disillusionment. Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I don't want to suffer that. And so I'm already thinking about how to avoid it. So I start with the tactics of protection that are not of God, that are not of this armor.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I got to put on the breastplate of righteousness. I need to step into right relationship with this person.
Right.
Which means I need to go up to them.
Right. And you could put on the breastplate of self-righteousness.
Yes. You know, so yes,
like I'm so busy. I'm on the Circle of Seven.
And, yeah, totally.
You know, I'm this great seminary director. You know, all of this stuff, which would work,
and they would be. Oh, I know you're so busy, and I know you've got a lot on your plate, and whatever.
Yeah.
And
but you put on.
Everybody's got a lot on their plate,
right? You put on the breastplate of righteousness, which is in right relationship with God, because God sees all things.
So in both of these things, this belt and this breastplate feels like dying. This is this weird thing.
Beautiful. I love that, Patrick.
Because my self-image is like having to take major hits here.
What's dying? Right?
I'm being protected. For me, I'm being protected from the enemy in me.
There you go.
My false self.
Your false self is dying. Your image that you want to protect, that's the thing that has to die if you want to put on this real armor. Always.
Right. As soon as I put that belt on, it starts.
Yeah. Exactly. Great story.
Right?
I love
so
it.
So belt that I go, okay, I got to go talk to her.
Yeah.
She's worth right relationship to walk up, and you might lose this relationship.
Yeah.
She might dismiss you now. Ah, it's fine. I don't want to meet with you. You might never even get to, because I really did want to go and meet. You might not even get to have that. It might be ruined.
Yeah.
You have to let her choose that if she wants.
Sure.
Oh, you know, okay, I got to come up, and I just remember it so well. I got to stand there in my shame and see in her eyes and hear her say, like, what happened? Where were you? And I've got nothing for her. I have no excuse. I failed. I'm so ashamed. I never wanted to do this to you. I can't explain why.
But okay,
I'm
Patrick.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Beautiful.
You know, like I.
But how can you trust that? How do you, Patrick, trust that? That expression right there.
Right. Yeah.
Why is that even a part of what you think could be good?
It's the only, because God is truth. He is that belt. God is righteousness. God is faith. These are eternal realities, and my self-protecting, egotistical, pride-filled self will pass away. It has no eternity in it. It's a temporary situation. And I have come to know that deeply again and again. And I only want to live in truth. I only want to live in right relationship. I only want... So I have two eyes in me battling. And there is part of me that knows the way of God is the narrow way is the only way to life.
Yeah.
I've experienced it too many times. And I've seen in myself and others the ugliness and false life of pretending, of being untruthful with myself, of living in deception and denial, of living in self-protection rather than righteous relationships. I just, I have too much evidence. Too much evidence. Although I fall prey to the, you know, the enemy comes and is strong again and again.
Again and again.
So that's a, I guess that's a,
that's big, a great story. Yeah. But it's also a trust in the right relationship with God, trust in the truth as, and my experience, I can imagine it's also your experience that moving through that kind of open vulnerability that is also strong in a certain way because it's connected to the truth of God over the long term builds more trust in congregational life than it would if you were to just preserve that false eye.
The actual fruits in community.
Yeah.
That's, I think, where we were going, right? I mean, and that was what was so beautiful about this experience was, I mean, I confessed, I asked, I apologized, I asked forgiveness. She said, "Do you want to try again?" And I was very moved. So then I also feel blessed. I allowed her to be the one to decide to give me another chance. I said, "If you're willing to give me another chance, I would love to try." Obviously, you know who you're working with now. I can't, you know, I'm not gonna lie. It is an issue I have, but I would love to try again. So I felt blessed.
Okay. So I just want to emphasize that because it's so important, so beautiful. So in your brokenness, being willing to be seen fully as God sees us, right? This is another right relationship.
Also see that, yeah.
Just be open about how God is relating to us. He sees all of our brokenness and doesn't obsess over it either. We're not obsessing over it.
Yeah.
We're just clear about it. But then there's also a part of trust. There's also a part of trust that has to do with the dynamic of God's life on the cross. That in brokenness, grace can come.
Yeah.
So your expression that as I'm standing there broken and open, I've been blessed by her willingness to not dismiss me and reach out again in kind of a forgiveness quality. I'm able to be actually graced and blessed with a love. I mean, it's a godly love.
Yeah. I could feel as it was all happening. Oh, I guess it was time again for me to have a slice of humble pie.
Yeah.
It's like this part of why I've discovered God is, or I have this issue.
Yeah.
That I have this sin that I continue to do, to fail, and hurt people I love and care about in order to go through these processes because I have experienced that a healthier self in me has come about as a result.
Yeah.
Even when the person hasn't forgiven me.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it. It's like, oh, yeah. If I give them their freedom to be just be disappointed and be hurt and be angry and reject me, and I may have to walk away having lost a relationship.
Yes.
Yeah. For now, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm also ceding control. I'm no longer trying to manipulate my life.
Yeah.
I'm trusting my life.
But what are you? You're also trusting that there is one who, in your brokenness, loves you.
I can feel it as I come into truthfulness.
Yeah,
I'm in like a sphere that's good,
right? No matter what. I think that's key too, because if I'm not in right relationship, then the only source of love is from other people around me.
And I can feel there's actually an illness in all of this because I'm not being truthful.
Yeah.
There's a lie in here that's sickening the situation so I can have adoration.
Which isn't love.
Adulation.
Yeah.
Fame. And be utterly miserable. And that's what our whole world is full of.
Isn't that weird? So the more protection and support you give to this false self, the more effort you put into maintaining your reputation, the more absolutely wretched,
bitter, despairing,
secretly inside.
And you know what you end up doing? You end up hating people.
Yeah.
You know why? Because you see they're falling for an illusion.
Yeah.
So you can't love them back.
And they can't reach your core.
And they can't actually love you.
They can't. The shield is really from this false self.
Yes, it's so powerful.
That is the one that's susceptible to these arrows that are flaming.
Yeah.
But the piercing... The piercing of the true self is okay in as much as it's then opening us to grace.
I think you've said it at the beginning. It's like my true self is in Christ. And in Him, all piercings lead to healing in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautifully said. So if I'm going to trust that, to me, this is where the faith comes in again.
Yep.
Can I trust that piercing, that the cross, that brokenness is actually the doorway to grace? That's a tough trust. I've seen it again and again in myself, in our students, in the congregation members.
Yes.
Gradually strengthening that trust that actually the cross is where God lives. That in piercing, grace can come in. This is not a natural trust.
No.
It has to be, it's something that grows and is strengthened. It's like a seed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why he stands there. And this image that he gives in John, just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert, so too must the Son of Man be lifted up. This story where those who were bit by the snake in the desert with Moses were told to look at this bronze snake and then they would be healed. So it's like it's not in us, the medicine. Instead, I have to look at this. He was erected as an imagination into history that I can picture in my mind's eye. That's different than how I do it. How I do it leads me to the poisonous bite of the snake. I'm bit by the snake. And the healing of that, the protection from the venom of the enemy, is seeing him, turning my gaze to him and seeing his faith, his truth, his righteousness, his peace.
Yeah.
And putting it on. And this is just a method and imagination practice of putting it on. And it was so beautiful in this story with this dear person who's been in Christian community since she was a child, like over 80 years now, where I had to ask her forgiveness. She blessed me with forgiveness. Which I didn't count on, and gave me another chance. I actually pulled off arriving on Monday for lunch. And we have this wonderful discussion about lunch, talking about her life as a music teacher in a Waldorf school. And she talked about what ruined the school community. I was like, oh yeah, what was that? Broken trust.
Yeah.
People talking behind each other's backs. It broke the community. And it was like the fruit of this action that happened between us. And we talked about, and then I just said, was able to then say, yes, actually we think it doesn't build trust. We're going to break trust if we ever make mistakes, but rather it builds trust if you see somebody will own their mistake, come up to you and say, I made a mistake, ask forgiveness.
Yeah.
No one is perfect. Why are you trying to protect a perfect image of yourself?
Yeah.
We do. It's foolishness, but we do.
We do.
Because we want to be loved because we think we'll only be loved if we're perfect.
Right. And that's why again and again, this trust in the one, in the one who shows us that to be broken is actually the doorway of God's love and mercy. To be pierced is actually the pathway, the narrow gate. That can inspire us to have more and more confidence as we grow and trust and have a greater and greater ability to use this shield.
Amazing. Yeah. So then the protection against the enemy also in community building is this trust work one to another.
And exactly. And that's why I feel it's so like just proclaiming this right now, for example, or talking about that or demonstrating that if it's you or me or even whoever, where it's emphasized, shone in the community starts to build trust in that way. Especially if you're an admired one in a community, if you use that light to start to shine this kind of light, that being pierced is ultimately a way to open up to more of God's grace. It inspires and makes more and more salient that reality. It's infectious.
Totally, and you feel the love substance flows across the channels of faith and trust between you. So this whole thing that trust is the doorway through which Christ enters our heart, that happens individually in my relationship with Him, but also between one another.
Yeah.
And it's just so stunning to me to witness the just fact of how this works, and that the self that is the admired self, the one where people think, wow, you're so amazing and you can do everything and you're so this or that, that causes all those people to feel despair on the inside that they're not like that.
Yeah, it just causes more envy.
Envy in some colleagues, despair in others. I don't know, I'm not that way.
Right, you know? Comparing and...
But when they discover I'm a sinner and I struggle and I flop around and mess up and hurt and seek forgiveness and resting in God's love and grace, they feel united.
Oh.
They feel encouraged. Oh, I'm like
that. I can
that.
Do that.
And the next thing you know, you're like, oh, well, we're just, God has passed out the gifts differently, but we're all one. Before Him as those in need of that love and forgiveness and grace. And the community substance grows and builds rather than this adulation community.
That's right.
That is not good.
That's not good.
We can admire, though, the Spirit at work in each other and the fruits of God gifted out, but that's different.
That's different. And it all rests on this way of being broken, being in truth and bringing that reality into a conscious relationship with God.
Yeah, and I'm just left. Yeah, this has been incredible, Jonah. And I'm left with this kind of afterglow thought of the faith being the fourth of these, kind of in the middle of the seven. And how these first three build up towards it.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, I'm tr- trusting in truth also. I'm trusting in righteousness. I'm trusting in the gospel of peace, right? Like actually why I'm putting on the belt is because I've come to trust in its power. Why, right? So that seems so core. If I'm entering into that relationship with that other person and admitting what I have done and practicing the truth, righteousness, and gospel work, I'm showing and demonstrating faith in the gospel, faith in righteousness, and faith in truth as well. I'm kind of putting my trust over there. It's this major account. It's our what we spend the full faith and credit of the United States, right? There's a reason money is connected to credit, yeah, faith.
Yeah.
It's what I invest my energies of my eye in. I'm going to trust these things. Trust in him.
Trust in him. Yeah, beautiful. Faith is the substance of the community of Christians. Yeah.
And what came out, the true protection of the self that needs to die to make room for the true self.
Right. And you know, one more thought there before we end. It is an interesting thing if you just follow the image also. Right. Like if you're hit by a flaming arrow,
yeah,
what's gonna happen? Mm. Well, you're gonna be pierced and
hot.
You're going to burn. Yeah. Like, have you ever seen those movies with people who get hit by flaming arrows? Eventually, they light up on fire.
Yeah.
And when I'm defending my small self, I'm on fire.
It's like that.
I'm burning up. I'm burning with a kind of anger that wants to... And eventually, that... fire works. And in my heart of hearts, I know I've been caught. My conscience actually won't leave me. And so even if you're hit and you haven't quite found the shield yet, or you've forgotten about the shield, that burning will be a school as well.
Mm, right. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Jonah.